The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Here we go again. It's the Bill Press Pod. Thank you so much for joining us. Well, Donald Trump refuses to stand on the sidelines, unlike every other president in our lifetime. Next Sunday, February 28th, he's scheduled to address the annual CPAC gathering in Orlando, Florida, where his aides have said he'll do three things. One, still insist that he won the November 3rd election, but it was stolen from him. Two, attack Joe Biden for anything he's done his first month in office. And three, declare himself ready to head the Republican Party and run for re-election in 2024. But is this what the Republican Party really needs or wants? That's got the party split right down the middle today. Many Republicans, led by Lindsey Graham and Kevin McCarthy, say that sticking with Trump is the only way for Republicans to bounce back in 2022 and 2024. But others, starting with Mitch McConnell, Mitt Romney, Ben Sasse, Liz Cheney, and others, say the party has to move on from Trump. One of the leading voices of the Trump opposition is former conservative talk show radio host Charlie Sykes, now editor-in-chief of the new political website, The Bulwark, at thebulwark.com. So, Charlie Sykes, good to talk to you. Good to connect with you again. Thanks for joining us here on the Bill Press Pod.
Well, thanks for the invitation.
And I want to congratulate you on The Bulwark, your new website. Great stuff in it. Great people writing good stuff. I'm in the lead, of course, so congratulations. How can people find you on The Bulwark?
Just www.thebulwark.com.
Thebulwark.com. You got it. Now, before we get into where the Republican Party is or where it's going, Charlie, I'd like to ask you, look, you a very longtime radio talk show host, so as I. How do you assess the legacy of the big guy in talk radio, Rush Limbaugh, whom we lost last week to lung cancer?
Yeah, it's dramatically split here. And I have to admit, when I had to write a piece about him the day that he passed away, I still have that residual resistance against saying bad things about people the day that they die. So this was tough, but I do think it's important to put his place. To put him in his place in terms of his impact on the media and on conservative politics, because you cannot understand modern politics without Rush Limbaugh. It is impossible to overstate the impact that he had on creating the genre of conservative talk radio, or in the rise of the entertainment wing of the Republican Party. You know, I wrote something. I said, basically, you know, how big was Rush Limbaugh? We're all living in the world that he created in his own image. And you think of much of the conservative right-wing media ecosystem, and most of that can be traced back to Rush Limbaugh. The good, the bad, and the ugly.
Yeah, well, not just the media, but politics in general also. Would there have been a President Donald Trump without a Rush Limbaugh?
I don't know. I don't think so. But then, of course, that's hard. That's hard to say. He played such a direct, crucial role in Donald Trump's rise. Donald Trump is really, in order to understand, I think, a lot of what Trump does, is to understand him as a talk radio candidate. Somebody who really picked up the narratives and the memes of talk radio. In many ways, Rush Limbaugh was his model.
And in fact, he kind of was the de facto head of the Republican Party, wasn't he? I mean, people didn't dare cross him.
No, he was for many, many years. I think his influence waned as there were more media out there. But to your question of whether Donald Trump ever would have been president, I think the important thing to understand about what Rush Limbaugh did was he normalized many of the traits that Donald Trump brought to the presidency. I'm not sure who it was who wrote this, but I think they put their finger on it when they said that when Donald Trump came out and he started making fun of the disabled and, you know, the racial dog whistles and mocking women, it sounded familiar because Rush Limbaugh had paved the way for all of that. For decades, he had softened them up. He normalized that kind of insensitivity. And you know, when I say that, I mean that he really cultivated a kind of insensitivity to things that the right saw as political correctness. The rest of, I think, America saw as just kind of basic decency. So he normalized a certain level of cruelty, a certain level of shamelessness, and really brought into the mainstream ideas that a lot of us had thought were had been exiled to the fringes.
And when we turn to the state of the Republican Party or the future of the Republican Party, I want to ask you a question that is the headline on Politico this morning. I'm sure you've seen it. Quote, anti-Trumpers are done with the GOP. Where do they go now? You've been writing a lot about this, Charlie. So.
Well, I feel seen with that headline.
Yeah.
Well, there's an interesting debate about whether or not there is a Republican Civil War, whether that Republican Civil War is already over. And I tend to lean right now that it's over. Look, this is Trump's party. It is thoroughly Trump's party. The only primary challenges you're seeing are between the Trumpy candidate and the Trumpier candidate. So this does raise the question, where do anti-Trumpers go? I've been in exile for 5 years now. I've been a political orphan, so I'm no closer to an answer than I was when Donald Trump came down the golden escalator.
Did you vote for Donald Trump?
Never.
No. Did you vote for Joe Biden?
I did. No, for me, never Trump meant never. There was nothing ambiguous about it.
Right. So is there a Republican Party today that is... is there a wing of the Republican Party that still exists, which is not Donald Trump, or just gone forever?
No, there is one, but it's a rump, and they're sort of huddled in the corner, hoping against hope that the crocodile that they raised in their bathtub won't eat them, or flipping metaphors, you know, that the fever will pass. And I don't think they fully realize how things have changed. I was actually, before we started the podcast, I was making notes on a piece about how crazy the state and local level Republican parties have gotten. If you think it's bad in Washington, D.C., it's gotten much worse among the grassroots. So it is really hard to imagine, a figure like a Mitt Romney or a Ben Sasse playing a significant role or wielding much influence in the National Republican Party in the short term.
Right. I was going to ask you who would be the leader of this rump? You mentioned two, Mitt Romney, Ben Sasse, Nikki Haley. I mean,
Nikki Haley's a windsock. I mean, I think she reflects more of what's wrong with the Republican Party, that she'll tiptoe out, you know, put her toe in the water and criticize Trump. And then the moment there's any blowback, she comes scurrying back.
Trying to get a meeting at Mar-a-Lago. All right. What do you see then the role of a Mitch McConnell?
Well, there was a moment, there was kind of a little Arab Spring right after January 6th. It felt like, hey, you know, something's happening here. Liz Cheney, of all people, Liz Cheney is not a rhino. She is hardcore conservative Republican. She stood up and denounced Trump in uncompromising language. I mean, there were no weasel words in that statement. And then Mitch McConnell let it be known that he was thoroughly disgusted. Then, of course, Mitch McConnell did what Mitch McConnell always does. Is he wants to have it both ways. He had a chance to hold him accountable, refused to do it, but denounced him. I think that he was testing the water. He's testing the water to see, is there, to your question, is there a rump Republican Party? Can he rally the donor class around him, the rational mainstream Republicans? And the evidence so far is no. And if Mitch McConnell can't do it, who can?
And certainly his goal is winning the Senate back in 2022. Is it possible, do you believe, for a Republican candidate today to accept Joe Biden's election, to accept the fact that the election was not stolen, and win a Republican primary?
That's a great question. I was thinking about that yesterday, watching Steve Scalise on Sunday. Steve Scalise, the House Whip, is on ABC, and he did two things. He tried to put the insurrection of January 6th down a memory hole, refused to attribute any blame for instigating that on Donald Trump, and number two, refused to really acknowledge the legitimacy of the election. And I think that's kind of a canary in a coal mine, that this is now the new litmus test, that you cannot be outraged about the January 6th insurrection or recognize Donald Trump's role in that, and you can't admit that the election was legitimate. You can't push back and say, no, it was not stolen. Donald Trump lied. Joe Biden won that election by 7 million votes. No, you can't say that anymore, which tells you about the baggage that Republicans take into 2022 and 2024. That they have to be now married to this lie for the next two or four years.
And that's the argument that some Republicans are trying to make, you know, Mitt Romney and Ben Sasse and Mitch McConnell as well. But it doesn't seem to be certainly carrying the day. So Donald Trump is going to speak to CPAC this weekend, right? He's been invited. He'll be the keynote speaker. This is his first post-election kind of appearance. What do you expect to hear from him? Is he going to announce he's going to run?
No, but he's going to he is going to obviously strut upon the stage for a while and try to get people to believe that he still is the heir apparent, or I'm sorry, the presumptive nominee of 2024, and he may be. But I think that the CPAC, the Trumpian CPAC, is a pretty good indication of where the conservative movement is going. And, you know, we started off talking about Rush Limbaugh, and I think this all actually plays together, that while the right was wildly successful in creating an alternative media ecosystem and an alternative infrastructure, that what happened at a certain point is they stopped being in the business of persuading, of arguing. And what they do is now is they talk to themselves. And as a result, they can win elections, but increasingly they're becoming very, very insular. And mm-hmm. So it has become this echo chamber. And you'll see that at CPAC. CPAC used to have a wide range of conservative thinkers of a variety of different shades and hues. And now it's all Trump all the time, just like conservative media is all Trumpy. It's like your choice between Fox News, the crazy on Fox News, or the even crazier on Newsmax, or the even crazier on One America Network Now, or whatever it's called. So this is a real problem as they become increasingly doubling down on Trumpism and increasingly doubling down on this kind of, you know, conspiracy theory, Marjorie Taylor Greene, big lie, my pillow guy type politics. They're going to continue to alienate a lot of voters in this country.
And continue, do you believe, to marginalize themselves, where, in yeah. fact, with the overall American political scene, that they're becoming less effective and less likely to win?
I do think so. And I think all you have to do is look at Georgia, Arizona, Virginia. Look at those states. Those states, you remember, Bill. Those yeah. used to be, you know, yeah. quite Republican.
Absolutely. I mean,
if somebody would have told, you know, your 20 years ago self, you know, those states are going to have two Democratic senators, you would have thought, oh, you know, what color is the moon in your world? But this is what's been happening in one state after another. And so you're seeing that playing out in places like Ohio and Texas, Nevada, other places, where, yes, this Trumpy approach wins primaries, but it does marginalize them in the general election. Now, having said that, here's the scary scenario. We are a two-party country. We're going to stay a two-party country. And it is not impossible that the Republican Party will come in back into power. And the Republican Party that comes back into power is going to be very different than what we've seen in the past. And given its anti-democratic, authoritarian leanings, that's a scary prospect. So, yes, I think they're marginalizing themselves. But if we've been around politics for a long time, we know that Republicans have become experts at winning elections without winning votes, that they are comfortable with a strategy, a base-only strategy that allows them to have power while being a minority party. And I think that is alarming.
So you don't see any possibility of a third party?
Well, I have a lot of wishful thinking, and I can engage, I can engage in wish casting, and I'm talking with people. I mean, I'm, you know, in these chat groups where people talk about the, you know, what the numbers look like for a center right centrist party.
Let me just jump in. Yeah, there was a conference call with about 120 leading Republicans from Republican administrations, Ronald Reagan, George H.W., George W. Bush, even Donald Trump, some administration people, right? You may have been part of that call that talked about this party is not going to ever recover. We need to start a new conservative party based on our democratic institutions and respect for them. Do you see that going anywhere?
Well, I was on that call.
Okay.
And I listened. Yeah. And by the way, I agree with the premise. I mean, you asked me about that headline in Politico. I really think, and this has been something that has really been gelling since January 6th. I think there's been a good deal of disillusionment with the Republican Party. I think that a lot of people who had hoped that when Donald Trump left, there'd be kind of a truth and reconciliation moment, or maybe there'd be a Khrushchev-like speech where we'd announce where we'd been, and then and we'd move on. But clearly, that's not going to happen. And what we saw from the Republican Party, what we saw, the number of Republicans that signed on to the big lie to overturn the election, voted to keep Marjorie Taylor Greene in office under committee assignments, all of that, I think, has driven a lot of people to say, okay, we're done. We're not going to rebuild this party. We have to find something new. But I don't underestimate the difficulty of doing that or the complication. So this was under the rules where we can't say who said what, but I'll tell you what I said. Whatever comes of it must be flexible. It has to be whatever group, it has to be willing to align itself with principled Republicans like the 11 that voted to impeach Donald Trump. But it also has to be willing to align with Democrats so that it doesn't become a spoiler group. So I think the flexibility is absolutely crucial. And I think what it needs to do is make sure that it aligns, not necessarily on ideological right-left terms, but in terms of sort of that would be the horizontal axis, but to focus on the vertical axis of things like truth, decency, the rule of law, democratic values, and those things, because I think there's common ground that we can make there.
Charlie Sykes is our guest today on the Bill Press Pod. He is editor-in-chief of the website, The Bulwark, TheBulwark.com. Let's take a quick break, and then we'll come back and pick up with Charlie on where the Republican Party goes from here. And today's podcast with Charlie Sykes from The Bulwark, brought to you by the International Brotherhood of Teamsters. The Teamsters Union, the largest of all America's labor unions and the most diverse, 1.5 million members strong in the United States and Canada, representing every line of employment you can imagine, everything, as they say, from A to Z, from airline pilots to zookeepers, under the leadership of President Jim Hoffa. Check out their website at teamster.org.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait till you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
And we're back. Today's guest, Charlie Sykes, TheBulwark.com. Check it out. Subscribe, as I do. Lots of fodder for your political thinking every day. Charlie Sykes, editor-in-chief, our guest today. So, Charlie, I want to come back to even short of before he goes to CPAC. There's been a lot of noise from Donald Trump himself and from some of his people like Jason Miller that he's going to play a major role interviewing candidates to challenge Republicans who did not support him in his contention that the election was stolen from him. And he's going to be giving them money. Here's my question. Do you believe that? I mean, does Donald Trump really have the discipline to run that kind of an operation? And will he have the resources to do so?
I don't know. I do know that he has enough to read people's Twitter feeds. I don't think he's going to go through a process of interviewing, because interviewing implies that he would ask questions that he'd want to listen to the answer to. And we know this about Donald Trump is that he doesn't actually listen to anybody. So he'll demand, you know, the signals of virtue. In terms of the money, that's an interesting question, because he raised hundreds of millions of dollars as part of this election lie scam, because that's really, you know, part of what it was. So when you have $200 million in the bank, you can do something. But knowing Trump, he doesn't like to spend his own money, especially if he needs it or thinks he can put his hands on it, which I think he can. It may get sucked up, not to mention the fact that it may get sucked up by legal bills as well. But again, given the mood of the Republican electorate and base right now, his endorsement will have some weight. The question is, what's it going to look like a year from now? That's a very, very long time. There's a lot of other things that can come. Will other Republicans stand up against him? I mean, one of the more extraordinary stories of the last year was the willingness of Georgia Republicans, not the ones running for Senate, the governor and the secretary of state, to push back against him and say, no, we're not going along with you, or the Republican governor of Arizona. If you start seeing things like that, it might not be the magic touch that he thinks. Also, watch what happens in Arkansas. I think it's very interesting. You have a senior member of the legislature, I believe he's a state senator, who just announced that he was leaving the Republican Party and is considering an independent run for governor. Now, that's one of those states where Sarah Huckabee, whose only, you know, qualification is that she is named Huckabee and she is close to Trump, is running for governor. She's got a lock on the Republican nomination. But watch, if there's a future for a third way, Arkansas might be the sleeper for next year.
Right. He is State Senator Jim Hendren. Yep. Right. He just made that announcement. And interesting, too, that the now governor of Arkansas, Asa Hutchinson, right, said Sunday on the talk shows that he would not support Donald Trump for nominee in 2024. So
very interesting.
Maybe you're starting to see more and more. In fact, Hendren's hardly alone. The New York Times last week reported, I wouldn't say there's been a deluge, but there has been a significant number of Republicans nationwide who are changing their registration.
Yes.
Have you tracked that?
I think it is significant. And I think what you're going to see is that that's going to start playing out down ballot. Now, of course, one of the stories of 2020 was that there are Republicans willing to vote for Republicans who are not named Donald Trump. The question is, if the party decides to misread the results and make itself Trumpier, whether those voters leave both at the top of the ticket and down ballot. And I think that ought to be what Republicans are worried about.
You know, far be it from me to give any advice to the Republican Party as a former Democratic state chair of California. But when I look at what happened in 2020, I just wonder, okay, Donald Trump was on the ballot, right? He was leading the ticket, and they lost the House, the Senate, and the White House. So what's the deal here? I mean, doesn't that sort of tell you something?
Well, it tells you a lot if you accept it, and which is why you have the big lie out there that, no, he didn't really lose. And so they haven't really, I mean, I'm sorry, I have a real hard time dealing with the number of people that believe things that are just not true. I don't know how you argue about these things with people who have their own set of facts and their own truths about all this. But yes, he has led them into a dangerous area. He's also, in a state like Wisconsin, one of the things that Trump has shown is his ability to inspire massive turnout among Democrats. At the same time, you have eroding Republican support in the suburbs. Now, in Wisconsin, they will, you know, point at the rural vote and how well Donald Trump did with rural voters. But the demographic trends in a lot of these states is not favorable to a Republican Party that decides it's going to go with sort of Trumpian white nationalism.
Right. Now, you mentioned a little earlier something about the grassroots and the state officials. In fact, it's been the state parties, really, that Republican parties that have taken the lead in condemning Republicans in Congress who voted either to convict or voted to even hold a trial. How do you explain that phenomenon? It seems to be this big gap, right, between state Republican organizations and many members of Congress.
Well, I call it the crazification of the local Republican base. And maybe at a certain point, it becomes self-selecting that the crazies drive out the normies. I don't know what's going on. But it's true. You look at the state parties in places like Virginia, state parties in places like Oregon or Nevada or in Arizona.
Ohio.
Even in my home state of Wisconsin, you're starting to see this, where a person that shows up thinking, hey, you know, I'm a regular Republican. My father was a Republican. You show up at one of these meetings and suddenly they're showing you the movie by the MyPillow guy. Which, by the way, they did in Crucial, Waukesha County, the Republican Party of Waukesha County had a movie night last week, and they showed the MyPillow Guy movie, the one he's being sued for $1.3 billion for because it's so full of, you know, BS. So I'm guessing that what happens is a lot of like reasonable, normal people just say, I don't want to be part of this club. I don't want to be in this club, which means that it gets crazier and crazier. So there's no question about it. And you're seeing this. And I think this is part of that phenomenon of marginalization of some of these parties, that you succeed in expelling all of these guys. You censure the Liz Cheneys, you get rid of the Denver Rigglemans, you get rid of the Adam Kinzingers. Well, yes, but what are you left with? And do you really think this is going to help you win elections?
Now, I want to ask you about a couple of people that I can't figure out. Let's start with the mystery man. Where is Mike Pence?
Ooh, that is such an interesting question because, well,
and what does he do now, right?
He's cast into outer darkness. He has been excommunicated by MAGA World because he did his job. Because for the one time in his vice presidency, he stood up and said, I'm going to put country over my loyalty to the Orange God King. And that means that he is done. So what was it? It was Navarro. Peter Navarro was on television over the weekend, you know, talking about how terrible Mike Pence was for betraying the president. Betraying the president for not exercising a power that no sentient human being thought that he had. But I mean, this is almost Shakespearean when you think of it, that Mike Pence was the ultimate loyalist. There was nothing he would not do for Donald Trump until that one thing. And then all of the rest of it didn't count for anything. And it's interesting how people in Trump world and the Republican Party just don't seem to understand that message. You can suck up forever, but you cross him once and you're done.
Right. And I mean, you're right. And the one time when he really did not have any choice, right?
None.
If he'd been able to overturn that election, he would have done it, I think, right? If his lawyers told him, it's up to you what you do, right?
Hey, but do you remember where you were or what you were thinking when you first heard this idea that, Louis Gohmert has filed a lawsuit saying that the vice president has the power to unilaterally overturn the Electoral College? And you laughed, right? You thought, okay, now it's getting crazy. The president of the United States embraced that. That was the central narrative of January 6th. I mean, that's how demented and deranged everything got. And then there's Mike Pence going, guys, I'm not going to do this. I really am not going to do this. And think what his status is in the Republican Party. So if Mike Pence is not loyal enough, what does it take to be loyal enough? Well,
right. Let me then ask you also about Kevin McCarthy. I mean, clearly, he has put all of his eggs in one basket, which is the only way to get the House back in 2022 is full bore Donald Trump.
Yeah, and think about how Trumpy the House Republican conference is. You look at those votes. How many of them signed onto that bogus Texas lawsuit? I think it was, 125
or something. Right. Including McCarthy and Scalise.
And they also then voted to overturn the electoral votes of the state of Pennsylvania. So they are all in. And McCarthy, again, sort of like Nikki Haley, put his toe in the, you know, out there criticizing Trump, but then scurried back to Mar-a-Lago. No, he clearly has decided that they're going to go all MAGA now, which is interesting because I'm not sure that you know this better than I do, probably. The battleground congressional districts that will determine who controls the House are not the MAGA seats. They're the ones that can go back and forth where this kind of crazy association with conspiracy theories and insurrectionists is not going to be persuasive to swing voters.
No, that's correct. And the analysis has shown that. I mean, like Charlie Cook and others, right, who are neither they're not putting out the Democratic side or the Republican side, just basically looking at the districts. But McCarthy has clearly decided, you know, that's his game. And there's no middle ground. And Charlie, you have mentioned a few times your home state of Wisconsin. Now, Ron Johnson, if you talk about the ultimate Trumper, right, who even basically he has dismissed the seriousness of what happened on January 6th. What armed insurrection? I didn't see any armed insurrection. What's his political future in Wisconsin?
Well, first of all, I go way back with Johnson. I've had a lot of painful things that have happened over the last few years. I have a list of like the worst things, and I move it around a little bit. But the whole Ron Johnson thing is certainly at the top of my list because I had high hopes for Ron Johnson. I really thought he was going to be kind of a Republican Bill Proxmire. He's now turned out to be more of a Joseph McCarthy. But his transformation has been remarkable to me. So he's up for re-election next year, which makes him, I think, the single most vulnerable Republican.
Hmm.
Out there, because this is very much a swing state. If he runs, you will see a massive Democratic turnout. This has been the formula for the last two elections in 2018 and in 2020, where the Democrats just spiked it in Milwaukee County and Dane County. They turned out every body that they could because they were so highly motivated by Donald Trump. Trump won't be on the ballot next year, but if Ron Johnson's on the ballot, they will have that as the turnout juice. It will be like rocket fuel. And I will tell you, the Republicans that I've talked to are right now very much hoping that he's not going to run. Mm-hmm. Because if he does run and you get that kind of a Democratic turnout, that could mean a blowout in other statewide races for the Republicans, including the governor's race, which Republicans think that they should win. They think they really want to win back the governor's seat next year. I think they're well positioned to do that next year in an off-year election with a weak Democratic incumbent. But if there's this kind of turnout generated by anti-Ron Johnson sentiment, that could blow everybody out of the water. Johnson's also not acting like a guy who's necessarily running for re-election because, I mean, he's strong with the crazy. And these are not the things that people in coffee shops in Oshkosh and Kaukauna are talking about. They are not sitting around going, yeah, I want to hear the latest about Hunter's laptop, or what about this? I mean, maybe there are some, but I don't think that he's acting like somebody with his finger on the pulse of the needs of the state of Wisconsin, as opposed to the id of the Republican base. That's just not big enough here.
Yeah. So we started with a quote from headline from today's Politico. I want to end with a quote from The Bulwark and one of your lead articles today, where the headline is, "The GOP's cowardice means the party will have to live in fear forever."
Yeah.
What do you mean by that?
That was a piece by Robert Trusinski. And basically, look, if you're not willing to draw the line now, you never will be. And, you know, part of being afraid is, you know, I mean, when you show fear, you give power to the bad actors. And I think that cowering leads to more cowering. And I think that you're going to see that. And we've been talking about this, how the people who want a decent, rational, reasonable governing party are being driven out, which makes the party crazier and crazier, which makes people more and more fearful of going up against the crazy. So it becomes this death spiral where you end up with crazy candidates for governor in states like Virginia, you know, crazy candidates for the United States Senate, maybe in places like Arizona. And again, that may scratch your itch politically or ideologically or your MAGA itch, but it's not going to get you back to where you want to be as a party.
And, you know, finally, I guess maybe I'm old fashioned, but I've always been a Democrat, but I've always valued the fact that there were two reasonable, serious political parties in this country, and people had a real choice. And, you know, it wasn't the end of the world if Republicans got elected. It wasn't the end of the world if Democrats got elected. But listening to you, Charlie, I'm not. That day may be gone forever, right? The party of a George W. Bush. I mean, I'd take him back in a second, right, compared to Donald Trump. But I would have taken him back in a second compared to Donald Trump. Will we ever get back to that day when there are two, again, respectable, legitimate political parties, a Democratic Party and Republican Party, or do you think it's gone forever?
It's gone for a long time. Forever is a difficult concept in history, but it's gone for a very, very long time. And if I could just throw out a piece of advice to Democrats, it's become more and more, given the fact that the Republican Party is not a good faith actor, rational party, it's very important that you Democrats do not screw this up. it's very important that you succeed. That if you decide to scratch your ideological ids, if you decide to do that sort of thing, and move out of the mainstream, if you are not listening to where most Americans are, there will be a lot of voters that will see this as a binary choice that will say, okay, yes, the Republicans are crazy, but you Democrats. Mm-hmm. And so both parties have huge responsibilities. The Republican Party, which I focus on the most, needs to get its mind back. The Democrats just have to figure out, how do you succeed and not go crazy yourselves? Of course, it's completely asymmetrical, but you know what I mean.
I know what you mean, and I do believe that Joe Biden understands that he gets it.
Absolutely, he does.
And that's the way he is governing so far. But that's going to be the hallmark, I believe, of his administration.
Yeah, and that's why he's president. Yes,
there you go.
Because he gets that. Yeah.
Charlie Sykes, The Bulwark. Thank you so much, Charlie. Great conversation. And again, I encourage everybody listening to check out The Bulwark, thebulwark.com. You'll find a lot of good stuff on there every single day. Thanks, Charlie. We'll catch up again soon.
Hey, Bill, it's been fun.
And that's it for today's podcast with Charlie Sykes of The Bulwark, bulwark.com, on the future of the Republican Party, if there is a future Republican Party. Thank you so much for joining us. We'll be back on Friday with our regular weekly Reporters Roundtable. Don't miss it. We'll have lots and lots to talk about. And in the meantime, wear that mask, practice your social distancing, stay strong, and come back and see us on the next edition of the Bill Press Pod.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.